Title of the message is Meet Cain and Abel. I'm back in Genesis again. I know that'll make somebody happy. I'm just not quite done yet, so. So I'm going to read a story of Cain and Abel. I'm sure we all have heard it many times over the years, but I want to read it again. Maybe you can find something new. I'm going to probably try to show something different out of it than probably you haven't heard. But nevertheless, we'll see how the Spirit moves. Chapter 4 of Genesis. Adam made love to his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. And she said, "With the help of the Lord, I brought forth a man." Later, she gave birth to his brother Abel. Now, Abel kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruit of the soil as an offering to the Lord. And Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain his offering he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your face turned downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it." Now Cain said to his brother Abel, "Let us go out to the field." And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. When the Lord said to Cain, "Where is your brother Abel?" "I do not know," he replied. "Am I my brother's keeper?" The Lord said, "What have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are under a curse and driven from the land, which opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops for you. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth." And Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is more than I can bear. Today you are driving me from the land, and I will be hidden from your presence, and I will be a restless wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me." But the Lord said to him, "Not so. Anyone who kills Cain will suffer vengeance seven times over." Then the Lord put a mark on Cain so that no one could find him would kill him. So Cain went out from the Lord's presence and lived in the land of Nod, east of Eden. What did you hear? I knew that was right where you would go.
God dislikes vegetarians.
Anybody else want to put a stab at it, so to speak? All right, we'll get to it. First of all, I want to remember someone in the past who just passed away, Rosie the Riveter. How many people remember Rosie the Riveter? Yes. She was went on to be, her saying was, "We can do it." Yeah. Girl power, I guess you would say. And it was a time in the Second World War when all the men were out working in the war. And so there was no one left to do the work or to manufacture anything, so the women went to work. And in the factories, I have to say that. They went to work in the factories. And as well as the home. And they never went back. I guess they never quit working, did they? I think that was probably the beginning of women being part of the working force, and they never went back. And they certainly played a very important part. And she passed away, and one of the things that she did was, I didn't write her name down, what is her real name? I forget. And anyway, she was an Abbott person who, she was a woman of means, and I did hear a couple things, but I'm not going to, but she was a supporter of PBS shows. She put a lot of money into the PBS shows, and I always liked the PBS, I think that. So she went on to make a, do something with her life. And if I remember right, she married into wealth, and she, or was part of wealth, and but that's beside the point. So we tell stories, and this is another story that illustrates a lot of different things. I think Callie and I were talking on the way over when CDs and DVDs and all this kind of media that we have, this digital media fades away and even books rot away. A person can tell a story and it can be repeated over and over and over again. And so for the longest time in the Bible, these stories were told orally and they weren't written down. And so this is another example of a story that was meant to illustrate something a lot more deeper and a lot more had a lot more meaning than the literal story. So I want to look past the literal story and delve deeper into it and get some truth out of it. You know, go down around and come back up around and try to see what we can see. I have shared with you my understanding of Cain and Abel story a long time ago, but probably no one remembers. So that's okay. That way I can repeat it several times and I don't have to worry about it. I will get this out of the way first because I want to remove the idea that, or at least I don't see it this way, that it was a story about when humans moved from a hunter-gatherer type of thing to an agriculture or agrarian society. I don't agree with that. It may have been, but the timing of the story and the question of, between what Cain and Abel did was, so who was the hunter-gatherer and who was the agricultural or the person who farmed? Anybody want to tell me that one? Because Cain was a tiller of soil, so he was the farmer, and the shepherd was Abel. He was a keeper of flocks. So who was the hunter-gatherer? Do you want to expound on that one?
Nope.
Okay,
they're
good.
Both farmers.
Huh?
They're both farmers.
Yes. So how can you say it's a time in which, when scholars want to say it's a time when there's a divide between the hunter-gatherer and the agrarian society. I don't follow that. I think that's a too simplistic, literal meaning that really is reading much less into the text than it needs to be or should be. So I want to clear that out of the way and get that out of the way so no one thinks that part of it. As I've been developing these ideas along the way about Genesis, I often wondered why someone else hasn't at least thought of some of these things along the way. And Conley said they have in the past, if you will read, but it's not a mainstream idea. And so my mainstream idea is not gonna, my idea is not going to be mainstream today about Cain and Abel. Basically, I will give it this way, and then I'm going to back up. I see it as two different ways of living. One way is that you're living in the blessing or you're expecting a blessing. Now, I'll come back to that. But first of all, but I also see it as two different ways of living life. It's an internal, something internal that is added to our dimension of our humanness. And as I have been developing from chapter 2, chapter 3, on up through the various different aspects that are placed in us, we were formed from dust. That was the form that we were made. There was a garden placed into us, a potential. I'm going to go over it real quick, and then I'll get up and start with the Cain and Abel. There was a garden placed in us, a potential of many ideas to grow, represented by trees. We were placed in time, the four rivers, the potential to think and to make decisions. Was not necessarily there, but it was a potential. Another one was we were not alone, so we had a helpmate. And this is not gender related. None of this is. Emotional consciousness was placed in us, and the naming of the animals was given us this emotional consciousness or conscience. A helpmate was formed from this internal emotional conscious, so it gave us 2 points in which we can now operate, or we now can reflect. So reflection was placed in us. We had the ability to reflect from one to the other. We had 2 points to reflect. We became an individual. We left our father and mother, our creator, and we became individuals. We were, and so chapter 3 begins with the serpent. I call that the questioner that every one of us has in us. We all question. When the serpent said, "Did God really say?" How many times do we say that to our parents? "Did you really say that?" We have this questioner thing in us all everywhere we look, and it's part of our search. And our helpmate wisdom and the questioner had an interaction. They had a discussion, and in the process, we live in a duality. And there was the voice of God was added, but we had a fear in it of it. There was something new added in there, and the curse was about enmity between everything, between everyone and everything. We have enmity. That's part of what I see what the so-said curse was about. This little thing of enmity, whatever, that's the little mouse in the wood pile or the rat in the wood pile, whatever you want to call it. I think that's what really caused a lot of frustration, enmity. If we could get rid of that, I think we could get along a lot better. But anyway, so new ideas are very hard to grow. Wisdom, we had to work from the ground up, and we were given a coating of skin, and we were sent out into the world. So now we come to Cain and Abel. And there's no way back to the garden, the flaming sword and all that, so there's no really way back that we're out and gone, and we're living in the world. So the idea is that, one of the ideas is that Cain and Abel were twins. And obviously Cain was born first, and he was the tiller of the soil. And he, as we said, went out and killed his brother. So the first thing if you look at it in the text literally, you say, does God show favoritism? Which one does he like? He liked Abel over Cain. Is this what the story is about? This God shows favoritism? You can very easily read that into it. But I think there's a bigger issue here. As I said, I think there is the idea is that there's 2 different ways in which we think. Most of us, no matter what, are probably not satisfied. We're always looking for something new. We're always looking for something different. Something different. We're constantly looking for that something different. We're never satisfied. I have my dispatcher or my coordinator. She's called a coordinator, and she shared this with me. And I won't tell you her name because she's going to probably listen to this particular sermon. Anyway, you don't need to know anyway. Anyway, she said that about 90% of her drivers, she has about 40 or 50 of them that she dispatches and watches over, and are never satisfied. About 90% of them. That they'll complain no matter what. Constantly complain. They can have the best load possible, the best thing of everything, and they're still complaining. And I agree with that. I'm hoping I'm in that 10% part. I think I am. I can make my own decisions, and I don't blame her for once in a while I have fun, but anyway. But that is the way of Cain. You're constantly outside looking for something there. And that's portrayed in the idea that he took some fruit. It wasn't basically the first fruit. It was just some fruit from his garden or some vegetables or whatever. And he took it and he gave it to as an offering. But Abel took the fat of his calves. Now, fat is always in the Bible considered to be blessing. If you're skinny, you're not blessed very much with food. You're hungry, right? And your animals are the same way. If they're skinny and running around like a bunch of little runts, They're starving. They're not blessed. So fat, and the fat portion, even in the Levitical laws and on up into the Jewish Israelite way of thinking, you offered fat as a blessing. Fat was seen as a blessing. So I'm blessed. Too much. As a few of us probably are. So that's always seen. So there's a sense of that Abel, or what the way I want to see it is, that Abel operated out of this blessing. He realized that he was blessed. It's an internal thing within us. This is all internal within us. It's a perspective on how we live our lives. So you can be content and operate out of that contentment, or you can be constantly frustrating yourself and always wanting something more. And there are two different ways in which you live your life. And that's what the story is about, basically. So enmity sprung itself up. It showed itself. The Cain got jealous. He got envious. He wanted what Abel had, enmity. I'm going to kill it all. Killed him. That idea, that illustrates that idea of living in the blessing has been stopped. Generally within humanity, if you read the story of the Israelite people on through, they were never content. They were always, always, always looking for, you know, they wandered in the wilderness because they weren't content. You know, on and on and on it went. So that carries through. The idea of being content and being blessed and living in that blessing is stopped. Jesus picks that up. That I think is the Easter story, but I'm not there yet. I'm not going to get into that. So what's left to explain? The land of Nod. For years and years, everybody asks the question, where is the land of Nod? It's in your head. You wander around in your head endlessly, don't you? You're in the land of wandering. How many times do you wander? You're wandering right now. That preacher's nuts. Don't you? So all these things that I've been building up and saying that are in us, in the end, we're these wandering humans on the earth. And that's the land of Nod to me. I can't believe everybody's so quiet and don't want to share with their opinion. And the mark was inside his head. And the mark was really, I think, a way of relating to people. How part of the process of always looking and always wanting to something more. I mean, for years and years, people have been trying to figure out what the mark is. And, you know, I would love for you to, you know, surely you've read this story many, many, many times. What do you think? We don't think.
It's interesting. There are a couple of lines that you were reading that parallel each other. And I think one of my first sermons here, I talked about a chiastic structure, which I'm not going to go into. But I'm curious as to what in the literature that points to. There are words and phrases that are repeated, and usually the center of that is what the author's main point is. But thinking about it, you think outside the box, and that is really cool with this story, because you end up, if you take it literally, where are these other people coming from?
Yeah.
Because if Adam and Eve are the only two, and you take it literally, where do the wives come from? And then you start creating this acrobatic stuff that you do in your brain. It's just too much.
Yeah, because the first question you're going to say is, who did Cain marry? It's not a literal story. None of this is literally to be understood. It's to give us understanding of why we are the way we are.
You were saying we're always wondering about the other people. Well, you have to figure somebody out when you meet them to know how to treat them.
Yeah, but we have a lot of wonderings in our head, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we wonder about the weather, we wonder about this, we wonder about that, we wonder about, yeah, how to treat people, we wonder how people are. We're wanderers, aren't we?
Yeah.
Isn't that part of our human existence? We're caught in this wandering land.
He tells me I think too much.
What, you wander too much?
He says I think too much.
Oh. Well, is that the same as wandering?
Yeah,
we think and wander too much. Or we maybe not enough. I think sometimes we don't wander and think very much. I think, my opinion is, I'm going to take one more step, and we're going to go to the Tower of Babel here real quick and touch on that. I think that if you want to control somebody, you want to take the questioner away from you, you want to take the wisdom away from you, and you want to take the wandering part away from you, and what are you left? You're left with a person that you can manipulate and control. And that is kind of conspiratorial in some sense. And you look around today and how we were taught, like I was taught growing up, we were not to ask questions. We were simply to accept. We were not to wonder. You were supposed to be focused on what you were doing. Yeah, keep your mouth shut. What were they doing? Well, they were cutting off all these things in order for us to be programmed to think the way they wanted us to think. It still happens today. Now, I know that gets a little out on the goofy edge side a little bit, but it's true. I mean, I don't want to get, Well, I mean, I don't want to get too far out on the edge, you know. But I think that's what happens. Yes?
Doesn't every leader or wannabe leader in the world want that, though, to control?
Oh, yeah. It's done all the time. It's done. Every leader, Hitler did it. I mean, they all did it. I think. Well, I better not say. I'll be good. It's being done today, without a doubt. And it's done. Your commercials. All these things are done to manipulate you into buying and consuming and to think a certain way and all these things. And if they can cut these parts out of you, your questioner, your wisdom, all these different things, your emotions, your conscience, and they do it. Churches do it. Prosperity theology does it a lot. I'll tell you that flat out. What?
Parents do it.
Parents do it to some degree, yes. Yeah, we have a granddaughter who basically did that and is doing that, and her parents are like, oh, what happened? She suddenly got it all back, and now she's out doing her thing. And they look at her and say, well, you're making this mistake, but she has to do what she has to do. I mean, I did it, we all did it. We have to acquire that back, and don't ever lose it. I think that's our treasures. Biblically, we're giving this. And people are trying to take that stuff away from us. But I think you're right, Carol, that we do that as parents. But then we shouldn't be shocked when they stand up for themselves and say, okay, I had enough of all this. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. Yes. So this student is here, this student is over there, this student is over there, and so you have to give an individual attention to each one to some degree, as best you can.
Or try.
Or at least give the idea out in a variety of ways. And I think that's what the church should do. The church should say, okay, this is a variety of ideas that is accepted within the pale of orthodoxy of Christianity, and say, okay, now you choose what you want to do, rather than saying, this is all you can believe, and this is how it has to be, and this is how it's been done for how many years. Each denomination does this, a little slice of the loaf of bread, and that's it. And they want to make it a whole loaf. So we are all these parts that are given us by God, or by God our creator, whoever that is, that's another whole issue. for us to have a better and more productive life. Now, I think, before I go on to the entire Bible, the idea that Abel is cut off and his blood runs out into the ground and the voice of his life echoes up into the spiritual realm is where Easter starts. That's where I'm concerned. And you can trace that through the Bible, and I'm going to do that. Hopefully, I'll have it together enough to be able to trace it to up to Jesus' time. And then Eve had another son named Seth. So she had three sons altogether. I don't know how many people know that. Probably a few. Some do, some don't. And that's the line in which the Semitic people came and the Israelite people came from, supposedly. And then you get into the whole Noah thing. That's really confusing, too. That's up the line somewhere.
That's an interesting one, too.
Noah, yes.
Oh, yeah.
The flood and Noah, yes.
That's
coming down the line, and yes. What always gets me is the curses. There's one in the garden, there's one in Cain, there's one in Ham that I know of, that I can remember. So what are all these curses that are not supposed to happen? We're not supposed to curse one another, but yet are in the Bible all over the place. And so I find that to be very interesting, something for food for thought.
Well, don't you have to show what is wrong and why it's wrong to be able to teach someone what is right?
Yeah, so you give them a different perspective, a different viewpoint. You say, okay, if you do this, then this and this will happen. Okay, so you're giving them a second point, a second vantage point to view the future or the results of their action. That's essentially what God has given us in this story of Genesis. We're given different points to look at. We can move over here and have a viewpoint of it, or we can move over here and have a viewpoint of it, so we're better equipped. It gives us a second viewpoint. But if you don't have that, or if that's taken away from you, then you're manipulated. What is that thing about dark matter?
Dark materials.
Dark materials. How many people watch that? Okay. There's a few of them.
I do have the book. I cleaned out my books. And that's a big book.
It's really
good. I found it and it was through my bookshelves.
Essentially, the animal that runs along the side of you is essentially saying what I'm trying to say. The story is about... I'm not really sure what it's about. I can't define it real quick. Anyway, each person has an animal that runs next to them. And that's like their emotions, a whole lot of things. That's like their wisdom, their what else is in there? A bunch of stuff. We don't really know. None of us know. Everybody who watches it don't know. They just know it's there.
You know, it's kind of connected to your soul.
Yeah.
In a sense. I mean,
it's connected to your soul, and it's really interesting.
Oh, it is.
And each person has a different animal. It's something like the Native Americans do. They have the same principle somewhat. Everybody, you know, a warrior goes out and gets to be a wolf or a buffalo, or it's the same principle. And so this is somewhat what I'm trying to say. We have all these things, but they're all within our garden, within us. I'm not saying that we have an animal that runs out here and trucks along. And, you know, I have a little pet dog that I like that runs along, but, you know, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know how we always say we have an angel on one shoulder, a devil on the other, you know? I mean,
so,
we can all put all this together.
Yeah, so this is somewhat what I'm trying to say that happens in Genesis. And so the Tower of Babel, for me, is where confusion is added. Why are we confused? Read the Tower of Babel. We're confused. It's a story about confusion that was added to our mix of things that we have to deal with. We're confused. I don't care who, you know. The story says that, you know, they all spoke one language and there's nothing that they could not do. And so the gods came down, it's just plural. The sons of God came down and said, well, we're going to make them speak different languages lest they work together and do everything that their minds think of. So we're going to put confusion in. We're going to make them speak different languages. So the story explains why we're so confused all the time. I mean, you can't say to us that you're always clear-headed and you got everything figured out. We are confused. So the Genesis story, as I see it, is all about us, how we are, why we are the way we are, and what we have to deal with. Actually, we're blessed. I think we are. We're truly blessed angels, the way I understand angels, don't have a lot of things that humans have.
They're unique. Huh?
We're unique.
Yes.
We're unique among the creations of the celestial beings. Angels are created for one particular job, and that's all they do. That's how I understand created beings in the heavens. We are unique, and that's what made Lucifer mad, because we were going to ascend above him, because we had the capability of ascending above him, and he says, I'm not bound down to them, and he rebelled. That's part of the story. We are unique, very unique, and I think our uniqueness is not appreciated as much as what we should allow it to develop. Any thoughts?
Maybe we don't, because we've always been told we're a sinner right from the start.
That's all part of the manipulation.
Right.
I
think the confusion actually is positive.
You can use it for
it. Because it forces you to take your meanderings, your wanderings, and keep them going, and not get complacent with, there's the answer.
It's a driver. So the cake. So the cake tastes better. Right. You have more ingredients. Not like the cake is ever baked. You know, we're always adding ingredients in it. We're always baking a new cake. We're always baking a new cake.
Usually that story is a negative. That bad things happen because they weren't speaking the same language. They weren't qualified. It takes out the variety.
So if you look around in the world, yes, I agree. I think, but isn't that why we struggle today to get along? I mean, we have different people all along. It does give some type of understanding of why we are in the position we're in.
Yeah.
And we are, and then Jesus comes along and says, okay, you're supposed to love your neighbor as yourself. You're supposed to come back together again. And so first of all, you understand the story of how we are, how we got there. And then you understand salvation and redemption a lot better. And that's my purpose of a lot of this Genesis stuff that I go bore down into, is because it does give you a better picture of what happens in Easter time. I'll call it Easter time. Easter time. For sure. And you can appreciate a lot more what Jesus had in mind for us. Just the simple thing of loving your neighbor as yourself would kill a lot of enmity. Or have respect would go a long way. Not tolerance. We don't need to stop it. We can't stop at tolerance. You got to go past tolerance. Just like justice, you got to move past justice. Anybody else have anything else to say? Amen.
Far from the forest moss and twist by the sin of man became a rugged cross, the precious Savior of the world she held in her embrace. She felt the pain of every nail that pierced his hands of grace. against the darkening sky. With care she cradled Christ the King and held him as he cried. See the cross of Christ now rising, towering over a world of strife. See the Savior pierced and dying, Christ is crucified on the cross. Arms are open still, redemption's grand design. Her outstretched arms are open still, redemption's grand design.